Good evening. Are we all thankful for air conditioning tonight? The portion I want to look at tonight is in John 10, verses 1 through 18. When he was teaching in his teaching ministry, Jesus used many, many, many examples from common everyday life to try to explain to his hearers what he was doing, what he intended to do, and what his ministry was all about. And you will find, even today, when you're trying to explain something and someone isn't getting it, quite often, if you tell a story or give some kind of illustration that will show your point, then they begin to get it. When teaching mathematics to my children, I used to keep a pocket full of change, and when they couldn't seem to get what I was doing, I'd throw the change out on the floor and use the money to illustrate the point. If we do this, this, and this, then this must happen. Sometimes it works, sometimes not so much. But in this particular passage, he's taking a very familiar subject of sheep in the first century, and he's expanding it to help people understand his ministry. It's not exactly a parable. The word John uses to describe it is figure of speech. It's a figure of speech, and Jesus compares himself to several things here. We're going to look at each of them in turn. He compares himself to a good shepherd. He compares himself to the door of the sheepfold. He speaks of his own sheep, or those who will hear his voice, and they will follow him. So these three metaphors are used to teach the people. With concepts of shepherd, gate to the sheepfold, ownership of the sheep. Now, raising sheep was a very common occupation. Right now, today, a cousin of mine raised sheep years ago, and I know one sheep farmer that I hunt with, and that's basically all I know of people that are involved with sheep. When I was a lad, our neighbors had sheep. So it's not anywhere near so common. Anybody here know a sheep farmer? Some. And so sheepfolds were built at that time, and they might be large enough to accommodate the sheep of several families. And if they did, a person would be hired to watch the door. He'd recognize and let the owners in that own sheep, but he would keep strangers out. And so an owner would come and call his sheep. And I can remember, just as though it was yesterday, my father standing at the back door of the barn. It was a door up on rollers, and he'd open it up, and he would call the cows. And they would come up to the barn, he'd call them by name, and they each had their own stall that they invariably went in, and he'd call them up to be milked. The big farms don't have anything like that. Now they got a tag in the ear with a number on them. But in those simple days, it was different. So an owner would come and call his sheep, and they would recognize his voice, and they'd follow him, while the other sheep that didn't belong to him would stay in the fold. They wouldn't pay any attention to him. And so the door of the sheepfold was what we would call exclusive. It was the only way in. It was the only way out. And so they'd go out to feed and drink during the day, and they'd come back in for safety during the night. So the door for the sheep was really an opening for life. It was vital for them. Now, to understand better what's being said here, we should take a look at Eastern and Western methods of tending sheep, because they're quite different. Here in the West, sheep are often driven with a sheepdog. And you have the border collies and some of the famous dogs like up in Scotland. They have trials to this day. for rounding up sheep, which sheepdog will be the champion. And so the shepherd goes behind the flock, and he works the dog. He might, in fact, be mounted on a horse. Sometimes not. And so the skill of the dog is crucial here to make the sheep go where you want them to go, along with the speed of the horse and stamina. Now, in the East, it's not done that way. The shepherd goes ahead of the sheep and leads them and calls them. They follow him. They recognize him. And so the two methods are quite different. Jesus is speaking, of course, of the Eastern method, which was common in his area and in that time of taking care of sheep. And so the shepherd goes out ahead. He calls the sheep by name, and they recognize his voice, and they follow him. Now, anybody with a good dog can drive sheep in the Western way, the way we do it here. In fact, the dog is in many ways more important than the person. My grandfather had a dog that could do that, Collie. But in the Eastern method, it's quite different. One person will lead the sheep. They're his. They'll follow his voice, and a stranger they run away from. They won't pay any attention. So we have then this whole idea of ownership of the sheep, leading the sheep, and the fact that the sheep recognize their owner. And the shepherd took care of them always. He'd know them by name, and he was exclusive. Just like the door of the sheepfold, the shepherd was exclusive. They would follow him, but not another. And so if we consider the door of the sheepfold, anybody that didn't come through the door, if they were climbing up some other way, they were up to no good. They were someone that was looking to harm the sheep in some way. If we look at the Old Testament, there's passages which liken Israel to sheep. And I believe we heard this morning, we all like sheep have gone astray, out of Isaiah 53. 23rd Psalm comes to mind, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. In Ezekiel chapter 34, the Lord is speaking judgment against the shepherds of Israel for failing to take care of the sheep. And it speaks of a future time where the Lord will be their God and David will be a prince among them. Now, Jesus is using this figure of speech to try to reach the people, to explain to them what was going on. And the placement of the portion is interesting because those who were the shepherds of Israel, if we look just previous to this particular passage, had just put a man out of the synagogue. They threw him out. What was his crime? He had been born blind and his sight was restored by Jesus. Now the leaders couldn't deny a miracle had happened. They even called the parents of the man born blind, said, "Is this your son?" "Yes." "Was he born blind?" "Yes." "Well, how did he come to see?" "We don't know nothing. You'll have to ask him. He's of age." They didn't want to get in trouble. And so they told him, "Give the glory to God. We know this man is a sinner." In other words, the man was supposed to say, "God really healed me. Jesus had nothing to do with it." But unfortunately for them, the man was stubbornly honest. He insisted on telling the truth. And because he insisted on telling the truth, they put him out of the synagogue. That was his crime. He acknowledged Jesus healed him. These were the shepherds of Israel. So now you get what they did. You get the people. And the people were just as familiar with sheep and sheepfolds and so forth as you are with Walmart today. It was part of their culture. It was very familiar. Didn't need to be explained. And so We're going to read some of these verses. Verses 1 through 5 speak of the shepherd. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Now, with what we've just learned about the Eastern practices of keeping sheep, this is supremely logical, and people should have been nodding their heads saying, yes, yes, that's all true. So the shepherd can come in through the door. He knows his sheep by name, and they follow him. They won't follow a stranger. And this is important because the sheep belonging to the shepherd will follow him out of the sheepfold. They know him, and they follow him because they're his. Now pay attention to this point. They are not his because they follow him. Rather, they follow him because they're his. That's a very important distinction. Verse 6. This figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, but they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them. So he's trying to teach them with something common to their experience, and he runs up against the battle of people that don't get it. A common thing for any teacher. Some in Israel were coming to Jesus. We know that. And we get a small picture of it in little snippets here and there. When the apostles decided they were going to replace Judas, we read, we want to pick someone who's been with us since the baptism of John and onward. Remember those words. So that tells me that there were others besides the 12 that had been with them right along. How many? I don't know. They put forth two candidates, so I know there were at least two. I suspect there were more. We also see the accounts of others who believed in him and followed him. The tax collectors that changed their ways. The woman with a bad reputation that was washing his feet at the table. And the Pharisee was saying, well, if he knew what kind of woman this was, he wouldn't let her touch him. Mary and Martha, who prepared a meal for him at the house. So some were opposed. But on the other hand, there were some that was ready to listen. They were ready to follow. The difference being, these were sheep that belonged to Jesus. They were his. And so they heard his voice and followed. So in verse 7, we try another example. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. So now Jesus is the door of the fold. Now, we said before that this door is exclusive. It's the only way to get in. It's the only way to get out. All others who tried to lead the sheep were thieves and robbers. And he says, all who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't hear him. Why? They weren't their sheep. They were Jesus' sheep, and they're not going to listen to a stranger. They're not going to listen to someone else. Now, in my times, in our times, we have seen many leaders of churches who have sacrificed a great deal and their only desire was what was good for the people. Wonderful, wonderful leaders from whom I have learned. On the other hand, we have seen others who primarily are interested in what they can get out of the people. So we just saw the reaction of the religious leaders when one of their flock was miraculously healed. What should they have done? They should have been rejoicing. Look at this. It's so great. Who ever heard that a man born blind was restored to sight? But no. They punished him for telling the truth. Now, Jesus said he is the door, and that means he's the only way to enter the safety of the fold. Anyone entering through the door is going to be saved and can go in and out and find pasture. Those coming before him were thieves and robbers, not having the best interests of the sheep at heart. And in verse 9, he says, if any man enters through this door, he shall be saved. He's going to go in and out, find pasture. It's a picture of a safe and contented sheep. There's only one door to the fold. There's only one way to get in, and Jesus is that way. So the shepherd we looked at was exclusive. He calls the sheep follow him, they don't follow others. Then if we look at the door, once again, the door is exclusive to the fold. There's only one. That's the only way you can get in and out. Now, in verse 11, we start a slightly different tact. He said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now, verse 10, which is, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy, it picks up the contrast between Jesus and other leaders. We've seen leaders who came to steal, kill, destroy. Some have been religious. Some have been political. They come onto the page of history, and they leave behind them what? A trail of wreckage. People are glad when they're gone. Jesus said he has come so that those who follow him might have life and have it more abundantly. It's interesting to me when you look at people, because people come and people go. I worked for a man one time, was one of the most hard-headed and hard-hearted men I have ever known in my lifetime. He was an older man, and he chased a nickel with a passion. But I worked there part-time. I was going to school. I was looking for other things. But there was other fellows there that worked there right along. And I went down there, and this fellow had a heart attack and died. Let me tell you something, there was a smile on every face. There was a spring in every step. And I went out of there, and I said to myself, I never, ever, ever want to live my life so that people rejoice when I die. What a testimony to leave behind. And so, he says, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Verse 11 tells us Jesus is the good shepherd. The Greek word for good implies noble or worthy. We think of David, who says he drove off a lion and a bear from his sheep, and he later became king of the nation. He was faithful in a small thing, his sheep, and he was given a much bigger thing to do. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. And so if we follow this figure of speech, the good shepherd, the good or noble shepherd would be willing to give his life for the sheep. But Jesus goes beyond this and says he will give his life for the flock. And we'll see this again in verses 17 and 18. Now, verse 12 says, "He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees a wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." So in verses 12 and 13, we're into contrast again. We're not talking about thieves and robbers here. We're talking about the hired man. Now, this hired man is not defined as evil. He's shown really to be a very common and average worker. He does not own the sheep. He's working for wages. And this man sees a wolf coming. All of a sudden, the job he took has a whole different aspect to him. Could be a hot job, could be a thirsty job, could be a boring job watching the sheep all day. Now it's a dangerous job. Now he's quite willing to tend the sheep while the task is a normal job. He can put up with hot sun and being thirsty and being bored if the sheep lay down to chew the cud during the midday hours. That's all good. But when extraordinary danger comes, he runs, leaves the sheep to face danger on their own. Now, his fleeing for safety is going to cause the death of some of the sheep he is watching. So clearly, he doesn't love the sheep. He loves himself more. Very common human trait. Now, in contrast to this hireling, and this is a study in contrast, the good shepherd knows his own sheep. And so in 14 it said, "I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." And so the relationship between the shepherd and the sheep here is compared to the relationship between the Father and the Son. Very close. And Jesus repeats, he'll lay down his life for the sheep. So we're beyond the Eastern method of raising sheep and the Eastern relationship between the shepherd and his flock, because the relationship between Jesus and his sheep is a closer and more intimate relationship, like between him and his Father. Although many might hear Jesus call, and many have heard Jesus call, it's his sheep that are going to heed his voice and follow. They're going to come when he calls. In verse 16 it says, "I have other sheep which are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd." So he's speaking of other sheep that he has. He must bring them and incorporate them into one flock. And the statement reinforces the concept that the sheep which are already his will hear his voice and follow. The teaching and ministry of Jesus had been to the Jewish nation. You remember when he sent out the 12, he told them, "Go to the lost sheep of Israel. Don't go in the way of Samaria. Don't go in the way of the Gentiles." It's in Matthew 10:6, if you want to look it up. Now he speaks of other sheep. Now, since the Jewish mind of the time, the world is divided into only two peoples, Jews and not Jews, or Jews and Gentiles, it seems likely the other sheep mentioned are Gentiles. If we take the sheepfold at the start of the discourse to be Israel, the sheep belonging to the Jesus hear his voice, he led them out of the fold to follow him, but there's other sheep which will hear his voice. He must bring them also so there can be one flock. That's where we come in. We know that Paul, the missionary to the Gentiles, took the gospel throughout the world, throughout the known world anyway. And he was specifically the apostle or the missionary to the Gentiles. Verse 17. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life so that I may take it up again. No one has taken it away from me, but I lay it down on mine own initiative. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I receive from my Father. So 17 and 18 enlarge on his statement, he's going to lay his life down for the sheep. And it's clear this is not the willingness of a shepherd to put his life at risk to save the sheep. He wants to defend the sheep if the need arises. Rather, he says he will lay down his life, not that he's willing to or he may. And the purpose of laying down his life is so he can take it up again. And the following verse makes it even more clear. Nobody takes or can take his life away. So I can't help but think of his statement in the garden that he could pray to his Father for 12 legions of angels to come and protect him. Matthew 26:53. I don't think the Romans, the centurions, would have stood too much of a chance against 12 legions of angels. Because the Roman soldiers guarding the tomb shook like a leaf and passed out from fear when they saw one angel who did not look friendly toward them. So what they would have done with 12 legions of angels, we can't even imagine. His enemies did not succeed. His death was not a tragic accident of history. Because had Jesus not been willing to lay down his life, nobody could have killed him, which is shown by the many times he simply walked away. He said, "Today, is this prophecy fulfilled in your eyes?" And then when they started to argue with him, he said, "Well, there was a good many leopards at the time of Elisha the prophet, but only one was healed, Naaman the Syrian. He wasn't a Jew, nor was he sent to a Jewish woman, but he was sent to a Gentile widow." Well, you know, he's telling them, God works through Gentiles. Do you think that you're the only ones that God is concerned about? And they were so enraged, they were going to take him out, throw him off the cliff. But he walked through the crowd and he walked away. How many times did they ready to lay hands on him? But his time was not yet come. The Sanhedrin sent officers to take him. He's teaching in the temple. The officers came back without him. "Why didn't you bring him?" They said, "Nobody. Nobody ever spoke like this man speaks." They couldn't bring themselves to lay hands on him after hearing him speak. So he clearly states that he has the authority to lay his life down and the authority to take it back up again, which he has received from the Father. So there is a plan in effect here. A fabulous plan. A new covenant, a new testament. A new way of thinking. A new way of dealing with sin. Well, people in the Bible, as we conclude, have often been compared to sheep. Between you and I, the comparison is not flattering. Compared to other domestic animals, sheep are neither strong nor are they particularly bright. They need protection. They need someone to watch them. If you don't fence them in, you got to watch them all the time, lest through their foolishness they wander off, they get hurt, they eat something that's not good for them, or do any one of 100 foolish things. They need someone to protect them from their own foolishness. That's where the comparison to people comes in. How often do we need someone to protect us from our own foolishness? Something we really want to do, that we really shouldn't do, that really isn't good for us, and yet we desire it anyway. The use of sheep, then, as an example, runs through our Bible, but we're no longer an agricultural society. We're no longer a rural society. We are an urban society. Herding and grazing is not even really possible now because everything is fenced in, posted, owned by somebody. And so if there are any sheep, they're out behind a woven wire fence somewhere. But if we pay attention and we understand the figure of speech, there is enormous richness there. The shepherd is an exclusive figure. There's no one else to whom the sheep respond. If someone else comes and calls, they're not going to listen. That's not the one. We know that. We might not know much, but we know that. When he calls, they hear and they follow him because they're his. They belong to him, and so they listen. So if you have heard the call of Jesus and responded, God bless. But no particular merit attaches to you because you are already his. You heard and you followed because you're one of the sheep. The door is also an exclusive entrance into the fold. There's only one. If you want to go in and out and find pasture, the door must be used. The door is Christ, and there is no other. So if someone comes and tells you, oh, there's many ways to God. Oh, there's many ways to the kingdom. My way is just as good as your way, or why don't you listen to my way? I think then they should read John 10 and figure out where it says, they will not follow a stranger. They'll flee from a stranger. I am the door to the sheep. Any who try to get into the fold but not use the door are defined as thieves and robbers. I'm going to get in by good deeds. No. No. I'm going to get in because of my lineage. I'm from the house of whatever. No. Now, we often say that Jesus died as a sacrifice for sin in order to save us. This is true. But this portion tells us he laid his life down in order to take it up again. The fact that he did take it up again is the victory at the heart of the Christian faith. He's the first fruits of the resurrection from the dead. And the old law about the feast tells us that the first fruits belong to God. And if the sacrifice of the first fruits are acceptable, which it tells us elsewhere that this sacrifice was acceptable to God, then the rest of the harvest will be blessed. The rest of the harvest will be like the first fruits. What is the rest of the harvest? You are. You are the rest of the harvest. Some of it. And first fruits has taught us that the rest of the harvest will be blessed. And we have read elsewhere that when we see him, we will know him and we'll be like him. And so, for those that are his sheep, for those that have heard his voice, for those who have followed him, I would tell you to rejoice in your salvation. Does me no harm to tell you the same thing again. Rejoice and give thanksgiving for all these gifts that are ours. Thank you.